morning. You're listening to the Peter Eichmann Show on KZUU 90.7 FM. If you're wondering why we're starting so late today, it's because the Cub wasn't open until about 7 o'clock, and unfortunately, we weren't able to get in before that to get the show going, so it took us a few minutes to get our stuff squared away, ready to go. We have already in the studio with us Rhino, the sports guy, who will talk a little bit of sports. Seattle Mariners, of course, intramural softball coming up. Peter Mann's also here with me. Got a couple PSAs I'd like to read. The ASWSU Housing Commission, the one that Peter Eichmann likes so much, helps students find a place to live and can help answer your questions about renting in Pullman. Even if you're having a problem with your landlord, you can call the Housing Commission at 335-9574 or on the web at cub.wsu.edu/hc. This April 20th is Eco Beats, an environmental awareness musical event. Come experience the great electronic music of local and non-local DJs while getting info, I guess that's information, from environmental groups. Stay tuned to 90.7 FM KZUU for more information. Well, once again, you are listening to the Peter Eichmann Show, and you can find us on the web at www.informationtechnologyprofessionals.com/PES, as in the Peter Eichmann Show. Our message board is located at www.witsybanter.com, and then look for the link that will take you to Interbanter. And little side note, our friend who runs that board, Michael, is 27 now. He just had a birthday the other day, so I'd like to wish a happy birthday to Michael Stevens out there. Even though he's a Husky, we'll still talk about him a little bit here.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Anyway, and then you can also email us. Our email's located. You can find our email on our website. We, because of the shortened show format today, we are going to still talk about political news. We're going to talk about tech news you should know. And we're going to... They're going off over there for some reason. I have no clue what's going on.
Rhino here is as bad as you. Every time you come into my room, my computer reboots. He just touches his computer over here, and it shuts off and reboots.
Oh, no. That's like our...
Internet streaming thing.
Oh, yeah. No. Dude, you weren't supposed to do that.
He's lying.
Anyway, I sort of lost my train of thought due to that in proper studio... experience, what do you call it? Improper pseudo, I don't know.
Interruption,
sure. Oh my goodness, that picked you up really well. Talk again.
It actually looks like a new microphone.
Yeah, it does.
It could be. Rhino is about 2.5 feet away from the microphone, and he was heard without a problem. Last week, or 2 weeks ago, when we were doing the presidential debates, if you weren't having that thing inside of your mouth, you weren't able to be heard, so... Rhino seems to like having things in his mouth or something.
Don't be dirty, Travis.
Hey, now. Stop talking. I'm going to turn that off. Because I can't believe that we can hear you so well. That's sort of scary.
Sorry about that, Scott.
Thank you. Scooter on the air, you silly goose. Just kidding. Anyway, let's go ahead and talk a little bit, just a little bit about my spring break. Actually, not really my spring break itself. It was my trip. This is a killer.
So you need to just relax. If you're at home, relax in a chair, grab a drink, get something to eat. This is a long story.
It's not.
Here
long.
We go.
Okay. After that that terrible review from the Peter Man, I'm going to go ahead and kill his microphone so he can't be so mean to me. No, I'm just kidding. I'll leave it on. Anyway, I was here for the first couple days of spring break because I was working at some of my other jobs. And... So rather than going home when everybody else did, I decided I was going to go home on Tuesday. And, of course, I take off and start heading to Seattle. And when you got to about, Ellensburg, there's the sign saying, pass is closed. And I'm like, oh, man, this sucks. You know, in all the years I've been driving back and forth, I've only been caught, now that's the second time in all those years where the pass has been closed on me. So the first time it happened to me, I knew about the shortcut that I could take to Clallam, which would get me 15 miles closer to my destination. And so I decided I'd take this back road, go to Clay Ellum. When I found out that the pass was going to be reopened at about 9 o'clock at night, I was like, all right, I'll just go to Clay Ellum and sort of hang out there for a little while and whatnot. And then as I go to a house of a friend, he has a cabin up at up on Golf Course Road. And he said anytime I ever need a place to stay or whatever else, I could always go to his place and sack out there or whatever. So I decide to head down the road, and I'm going to this guy's house. And unfortunately, there was about 3 feet of snow surrounding it, because it's actually like a summertime cabin. And I had my snow shovel with me, so I decide that I'm going to go ahead and dig my way to the front entrance. And I finally make it there, and I get inside. I can't get the heat going, so I'm in there, and it's getting colder and colder as the night goes on. I'm like, well, I can't stay here all night. So I get out, and I head back to Clay Elum. And at that time, I find out the pass won't be open until 9 o'clock in the morning the next day. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. So I decide I'm going to be staying in that area. So I go and get myself a room in Ellensburg at this little hotel called the Waits Hotel. And I never imagined myself staying at such a place. There was holes on the door, there's ants on the floor, there's cobwebs in the bathroom's window. It was scary. I didn't even want to lay down on the bed. Anyway, I ended up not really getting a lot of sleep that night, and I was there until the morning, and went ahead and headed off about 7 o'clock in the morning to, by that time, the Snoqualmie Pass is not going to be open until 4 in the afternoon, and Stevens Pass was going to be open at 9 in the morning, so I decided to go ahead and head up to Stevens Pass, and I go driving up there. As I get there, they change the time of their opening from 9 to noon, and I'm like, okay, that's no big deal, because by then it's 10:30. I'm like, not too bad. Then they change it to 2. Then they change it to 3. And then I hear on the radio that Snoqualmie is going to open up at noon. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So now I'm sitting up there, and I'm going to have to wait forever. I'm going to have to turn around and drive another hour and a half to get back to Snoqualmie Pass. And of course, that's what I did. I get back to Snoqualmie Pass. And I finally get home after only 27 and a half hours of traveling. And that's one heck of a spring break. I guess that was my, a lot of people go to Florida for spring break. I went to Ellensburg for spring break for a day at least. And then from there, I'm home. And I didn't really do a whole bunch when I was home. Just hung out with the family, did that kind of stuff. Peter, man, I hear you went out shooting and stuff like that. Is that true? Yes, Peter, man? Shooting? Guns? Ammo?
Yes. Yes, I did. Sweet. That's all I did.
That's all you did?
That's all I did.
That must have been nice.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fun.
What did you shoot?
Everything.
You shot your dog?
Anything that moved. No, I'm just kidding. Guns. I just shot a lot of handguns and rifles and anything else I could find.
Any cool guns that you shot?
Nothing of note. That's really cool. Just your standard guns.
Which ones were yours?
The cool ones.
Which were?
Handguns.
Which were?
Very cool.
Which were?
Fun to shoot.
Which were?
I'm not sure I can come up with much more things to say here.
What about what kind they are, you silly goose?
What kind? I just told you they're handguns.
Okay, the Peter man doesn't want to play this morning. He's being bitchy.
How about we talk about your horoscope?
No, let's not talk about...
You got a five-star day coming, it says here, though.
All right. What
it says, let your worldly outlook lead the way, and you'll be sure to discover all sorts of intriguing people.
Obviously, they're not talking about this morning. Both of you guys are being putzes.
Well, are you giving us your worldly outlook?
No, you guys are just being putzes. Peterman won't even tell you what kind of guns he has. What a jerk. That's all I have to say.
No.
No what? Just tell us.
No.
Okay. I think Peter's embarrassed because he owns a 9.
No.
Yes, exactly.
So do we need to switch topics here? How about the brand new Evergreen? They redid all of the formatting and the text.
Yeah, I was just actually...
Completely different outlook.
Take a look at the Daily Evergreen this morning. They have new text up top and new look of the paper, which is actually something they actually change quite often. I mean, you could go back through the last couple of years that I've been here, and see the different headers and whatnot. So, sort of interesting.
I like the old one.
Yeah, I was going to say, I really like the old one and the old clock tower.
You know, the thing is that if you look through all the different years, every time they change it, it's sort of like, gosh, I like the old one better. But then after a while, you sort of get used to the new one.
There's nothing to get used to, though. It's just text. There's nothing to catch your eye or anything.
But yeah, but the way they wrote the daily across the top.
So we don't mistake it with another paper we get here?
I guess. So anyway, talking about the Mariners, how about the Mariners?
How about them?
How about Ryan Anderson? Does that suck or what?
Well, we didn't really need him anymore.
Yeah, but still. It would be nice to see the guy play after having been on the team since Randy Johnson was around.
It's somebody we can hide until we need him next year. We may actually lose some of these free agent pitchers. We got a really old staff that's eventually going to need replaced, and Gil Mesh is coming up. He'll be good for us. You got any input on that?
No, not really. I don't keep up with Mariner baseball. If you know me, you know that basketball is a superior sport.
What about Ken Cloud?
I like basketball.
See him pitch yesterday? Or was it 2 days ago?
Yeah, I saw Ken Cloud pitch, and I saw our relievers give up 10 runs in that game.
Well, that's only because we were bored.
Bored? You don't give up 10 runs when you're bored.
Sure you do.
And why didn't...
You know, it's 90 degrees out. You want to enjoy the day, be out on the grass as long as you can. Hey, give the fans their money. They came to see baseball. You know, you don't want to sock it away in an hour and send them home. That's why games last so long.
So I was talking to you earlier about the Hall of Fame predictions for next year. They predicted the West too on ESPN. We're not predicted to finish first.
Of course not.
We're predicted to finish second behind Texas.
Are we ever predicted to finish worst or first?
Well, we were a few years back. I remember when we were in the old American League West back with the White Sox.
Okay. Well, what about now? You're talking.
Like 90.
You're talking ESPN, right?
ESPN, yeah.
Right. Now, see, the thing is that, you know, it's sort of like the Sports Illustrated jinx, you know. I don't care that they're not picking us to finish first. I mean, we played on the field.
If jinx doesn't work very well, though. Look at the Mariners last year. Brett Boone was on the cover, and so was Ichiro.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that if you look at the it's who they picked to win the World Series or who they picked to win that kind of stuff.
I thought whoever's on the cover got jinxed.
Yeah, they get jinxed, too. But no, it's just like the whole entire thing, and we talked about this with Coach Akey, and it's like if you listen to the polls, you know, why would you even bother going out to play the game? I mean, it's like they can make all the polls they want, but, I mean, really what matters is what happens out on the field. And they can, you know, they can say all the things they want. They can analyze all the things they want. That's what they get paid for, of course.
So you're saying we shouldn't listen to George Steinbrenner because he's predicting another World Series?
Another one, huh? I thought the Diamondbacks won this last
one. They did.
Oh, so what's this other World Series he's talking about?
They have won 3 of the last 5 years.
Oh, and that counts?
That counts, yeah.
Oh, no.
Especially when our team hasn't won a World Series yet.
Yeah, well, you know, we've gone less years without a World Series than, like, Chicago and Boston.
Okay, got me there.
Yeah, it's true. They've gone like 80 plus years. We've only gone like 27 years.
I think 1919 was last. No, it was
19. I think it was
1913. That was last year the Cubs went.
Okay, because I think Boston's 1919, right around there. 1918.
Something like that.
1918. Yeah, right in there.
Back right before they got Babe Ruth.
The curse of the Bambino. Did you hear that? They're trying to exercise the curse by getting a piano out of this lake that supposedly was thrown in there by the Babe.
That's going to do it?
I guess. They're trying everything they can to exercise the curse, man.
How about they remove his plaque from center field at Yankee Stadium? I might get rid of the curse.
There you go. Have a recon mission go in there and get rid of the house that Babe built, eh? Well, I think that, you know, that April 2nd is Jay Buhner night at the Mariner game.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I'm going to be there. I'm going to go out there and, you know, got to see Bone and his day at the Mariner. I wonder if they're going to, wouldn't that be cool if they renamed it, Jay Buhner Field at Safeco Stadium? Or Jay Buhner Stadium at Safeco Field?
Not quite practical.
Or Safeco Field at Jay Buhner Stadium? Because really...
You call it Jay Buhner Field at Safeco Stadium.
Well, no, because right now it's Safeco Field.
And they could rename it.
Right, so
like
I'm saying...
Key Arena.
Right. Well, no, what I'm saying is that they could call it Safeco Field at Jay Buhner Stadium. Or maybe they're going to rename, like, the Alaskan Way Viaduct to Jay Buhner Express. Or
like Friel Court in Beasley Coliseum?
Yes, exactly. Are you ready to feel the heat? Is somebody having a baby out there?
Probably.
That's what it sounds like.
Well, let's go ahead and take care of that, Peterman? The man in charge. Somebody's out there, like, moaning and stuff. I don't know what's going on. Pretty weird. Anyway, getting back with the Mariners and everything else like that, I'm definitely looking forward to this coming season. I'm not going to be at opening night, of course, but like I said, I will be at the Jay Buhner night, which is the second night, and sort of excited to see what they have planned and everything. And I really wonder if his number is going to get retired against his wishes, or if they decide to retire two numbers or three numbers that night.
Possibly.
I mean, they might retire 21, 24, and 19.
Why not four?
Well, I was thinking about that because I was mentioning that the other day, and I think that he has done a lot and everything like that, but I just wonder, the more I think about it, the more I wonder, you know, you can make a huge case for 21 because, you know, I mean, he's known as Mr. Mariner and, you know, AL.
You want to talk about All-Star games? I mean, Harold Reynolds went to most All-Star games.
Yeah. But just, you know, what he's done for the team. Because I guess that's sort of what I look at is, you know, what have they done for the team and how good of a player they've been for the team, not necessarily as a personal level.
Well,
in
what
some ways.
Did either of them really do for the team then?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Neither of them really put more people in the seats. It wasn't
Alvin
until
did.
Well, I don't think so.
AD did. Oh,
I
yes,
think
he
that
did.
All
AD
the fans
did.
That went would have gone whether AD was there or not.
That's not true. There was a game that I went to specifically to see AD. Happened to be his very last game ever as a Mariner, but I went to it just because of him. So did a lot of other fans, I'm sure.
That's the Gaylord Perry theory.
That they'd come to see Gaylord?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring him in so he can get his 300th win in a Mariner uniform.
Yeah.
Have a bunch of hoopla.
Yeah. Well, hey, works.
They'll bring back Griffey when he's about to get to, like, 700 home runs.
No, I don't know if he'll come back. It would be sort of interesting to see if he does, but do you want to see him come back?
Heck yeah.
Really?
In left field.
You know, the more I think about it, the more I think that I don't want to see him back.
How come?
Well, if you listen to, you know, some of his former teammates from Cincinnati,
mm-hmm.
if you think about some of the things they're saying that, you know, like, you know, the fact that the leather recliner has been removed from the clubhouse since he's been gone and all these other things, it's sort of like, you know, he's a distraction to the chemistry that built.
But it's kind of weird that no current teammate ever says anything like that.
Well, of course not.
What do you mean, of course not? There's plenty of people in the majors. Let's look at the Yankees right now. They completely turned on one player recently. Did you hear about Rivera?
Well, that's because he's a thief, and I hate thieves. I think he should be strung out bad.
And what he did was worse than what like John Rocker did or Carl Everett or when Roberto Alomar spit on the umpire.
Yes. Roberto Alomar is very unsportsmanlike, and he should not be revered for his sportsman attitude because he doesn't obviously have one.
And worse than Daryl Strawberry smoking snorting cocaine or
Daryl Strawberry
with marijuana in the back seat of his trunk.
Those guys, once again, also did bad things, and I'm not saying that they didn't. But what I'm saying is that stealing from your teammates.
He was probably underpaid.
Stealing, $1 million a year. Stealing from your teammates, I mean, being a thief is not acceptable in any way, shape, or form. And if you decide to be a thief, you know, you shouldn't be in that clubhouse or you shouldn't be part of their team. And that, by all means, I'd say, be honest with you, the way I think, the thing that I think they should do to thieves in general is kill them. I'm dead serious. I hate thieves with a passion. I get back home, I found out my stepdad's shop was broken into and a whole bunch of his tools and stuff were stolen. And I'm just like, you know, a dirty son of a gun that has no respect for other people's property decides to go in there and take from him because they don't have and they want. So rather than going out and finding a job on their own or going out and getting work on their own or even going out on a street corner and holding up a sign and begging for money, they go and steal from somebody else who has worked hard to get what they have.
But here's the thing.
So the thing is that stealing.
You can't execute thieves because
sure
then the Democratic Party would cease to exist. I mean, how can you execute all of them?
That would be great, wouldn't it?
So did you guys hear about Bush's ties with Enron?
Yes.
The most recent ones?
No, go ahead and enlighten us there.
Okay.
All the email conversations that have been going back and forth that they found out about.
Okay.
That Bush's primary supporter is the guy from Enron now.
Okay.
Found that out.
All right. And your point is
okay.
What?
Okay. And have you seen
and did
history
you also,
how Henry Ford had conversations with the government when he got bailed out, and so
who's the president? Who's the president then?
And did you also
must have been a Republican?
Did you also see that Enron and all sorts of other big corporations donate large amounts of money to the party that's in power? Enron had given a lot of money to the Democrats as well. Enron and other big corporations give money to the party that's in power because they want them in their back pockets.
As well as the
simple
other
as that.
Parties.
And the fact that the Republicans are the ones in power, the Republicans are the ones getting the money this time.
In power? Before that, you call this in power?
You know, if we had Al Gore as president, right now we would still be talking about maybe thinking about saying something mean in some sort of way to Osama bin Laden and stuff like that.
Here's the thing. Forget
that. We wouldn't have been over there kicking
Enron,
their butts.
Back with Enron. When you talk about Bush being involved with Enron and having all these scandals, you got to remember that for Enron to really profit, it needed things like the Coyote Treaty passed, which Bush walked away from. It needed new energy policies passed, which Bush absolutely refused to sign and never made it through Congress because he threatened to veto it. All these things that Enron needed to make money have been turned down by the Bush administration. So how do you find there's a scandal between Bush and Enron here? If anything, there's a scandal because Bush is not helping Enron.
It's the Democrats trying to do whatever they can to discredit Bush.
The scandal is that Bush was willing to help them out until he got what he wanted. Then he turned his back on them, just like he's done to the American people.
What? You are a Democrat. You're the worst kind.
You'll have to expand on that one. How has he turned his back on the American people here?
How is he helping the American people?
No. Don't try and put a question in my face here. You made a statement, and I'm asking you to clarify.
He said that he was a better option for president, even though he didn't get the most votes, even though Gore had the many, many, many more votes than Bush did. We have a president who said he was going to do so many things, but what has he really done for us?
Again, you're being vague. Tell me some of the things that he's turned his back on the people for. Give me an example of something where he said, I will do this, and he's turned his back on the American people.
We have a president who can't come up with ideas of his own, so he's covering everything up with bombing this place, bombing that place, making sure that we...
Again, you're doing another
Democratic tactic.
You're just changing the subject. You said Bush has turned his back on the American people. I want an actual example of something that Bush has done to turn his back on the American people. Not he's covering this, he's covering that, vague things like Gore got more votes from the 2000 election. Give me an actual example.
By not focusing on the real issues.
Oh, way to go, Democrat power! Way to go, Rhino!
Real issues, not meaning. Meaning.
I love that. Isn't that the best statement I've just heard of the day?
Every time I see him speak, all I can think of is his dad saying, no new taxes, no new taxes. We're going to do this, we're going to do that. He takes office. 4 years later, the only thing that he can show from his presidency is he bombed a few countries.
So what you're trying to tell me is
the 1,000 points of light and the other free trade agreements had nothing to do with
anything.
So what
you're trying to tell me is that you actually can't come up with an example of how Bush has turned his
back. Except his dad.
Except to look back at his dad.
Only that he's a horrible president, one of the worst we've ever had.
And you can't give me an example of how that's specific. You can just give vague generalities that you hear on CNN saying that Bush is a bad president.
Tell me what he's done.
I'm asking you to tell me what he hasn't done.
I'm asking you what he has done.
Okay, he's defended the American people, the war on Afghanistan.
Any president would have done that.
No, not any president would have done that.
Any president would have defended the American people.
Not any president would have done that. Most presidents, especially if they're Democrats, don't want to go into any kind of war or anything like that. Since Bill Clinton is like, the whole entire time he was in office, kept on reducing military, closing bases, reducing the military. It's like, when it comes time to use the thing, he's going to be like, well, I guess if it's a police action and you know, it'll make me look good, I'll go ahead and use it. But
no. Here's a good example.
This is like a real war.
Okay. During Clinton's presidency, you had the bombing of the World Trade Towers with the bomb in the basement thing that went off. And after that, that bombing was linked back to Osama bin Laden at the time. It was on the news. Everybody knew about it. And what did we do? We launched some cruise missiles at an abandoned camp. And everybody knew that the camp was abandoned, but we launched the missiles anyways because it looked good. And now we're finding out that during Clinton's presidency in, like, 96, the Saudi government actually offered to capture Osama bin Laden and hand him over to the United States. And Clinton turned it down, saying that he wasn't sure that we could have a strong enough case to prosecute him. And so he turned down the chance to capture a known terrorist. Now, explain to me how that presidency did all this to defend the American people.
That's exactly like saying FDR blew it when he had the chance to cut off Hitler at the knees, but he let Hitler take over country after country after country and not intervene until they were actually bombed in Pearl Harbor. It's the same line of thinking.
The American people did not support such an action because they wanted nothing to do with that kind of war. It wasn't until that we were bombed that we had to do something about it. We were bombed by them in the World Trade Center years ago, and nothing was done about it.
And the American people supported retaliation then, just as they do now. Granted, this is,
you know,
on
maybe
a
if retaliation
scale.
Had been done back when that originally happened, we wouldn't have what's going on today.
We can't argue about what the American people wanted because Gore would be president if we had what the American people wanted.
No.
Yes, he would.
No.
No, because
Gore had more votes.
Because
is there an argument there?
The American people still want the. They have not gotten rid of the Electoral College, therefore they must still want it, right?
It's one of those things like, let's try and get rid of the president's salary. That's never going to happen in a million years.
Yeah, I don't think Bush would want to work for free.
Well, here, I have a question for you since you're a Democratic here. Are military people Americans too? Because if I remember, their votes weren't counted in that election.
Ooh.
Are they un-American?
Yes, they must be.
Yeah. Because every American's vote was counted in the
And so were all the Mexicans' votes. Yeah. And all the other illegal immigrants from other countries that came across and were voting in the election that should not have been voting.
Yep.
That's okay, Rhino. We understand.
I don't even understand your line of questioning there.
No, I wasn't questioning. I was pointing out the fact that illegal immigrants from other countries voted in the election. They were able to register and vote.
Oh, I actually posed a question.
Oh, you did?
He said that the American people spoke and the American people voted and that the majority of the votes were for Gore. And I asked, is the American military considered American people because their votes weren't counted if they were overseas? Does being overseas somehow absolve your American citizenship, or do their votes just not count, period?
What amount of votes weren't counted overseas?
There were hundreds of thousands of votes that were not counted from military personnel overseas because they were shipped a day late or something. Because they come across by boat, not plane, and the boat was late. And so they didn't count any of the votes because it was wrong.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing, too, though, is that actually something that I don't know if Rhino had a chance to see because he hasn't had a full-time job yet. But many, 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 many millions of Americans saw a great tax cut and saw rebate checks come from the United States government. Not due to Bill Clinton, but due to George Bush, which that money, I'm sure, was not put in somebody's mattress and scrolled away. I'm sure they took that money and spent it in the system, which I'm sure then would allow those people who were working to get that money. And sort of, you know, this you can almost go back to the minimum wage thing, you know, how minimum wage throws everything out the
kitchen.
I wish.
There been anything brought up about that?
Minimum wage?
Yeah, about like making a general minimum wage where it's across the board like $5 across the United States.
No. And the thing is,
why not?
Because the states have the right to be more restrictive than the federal government.
I don't think
that's a state. No, that's a state's right.
I don't think
it's the right of the state to be more restrictive of laws than the federal government.
I think that the states need to be more restrictive, and I think there should be some kind of a cap put on it.
Oh, totally. I agree there. You know, the
$6.90, that's outrageous to be minimum wage.
I think it's sort of funny. I mean, that's actually one issue that we definitely both agree on, even though we definitely have different political outlooks. I mean,
if Bush does something about minimum wage, I will support Bush. I can tell you that right now.
Well, you know, minimum wage is something that's really important. But one of the main
needs to be done is minimum wage in Washington needs to get dealt with. It's not, I mean, the federal government would be nice if they stepped in and said, no, that's illegal to do. But the minimum wage in the state of Washington is really what needs to get taken care of. Maybe a new referendum gets voted in or that old one gets voted out. Because, I mean, that's just, it's insane. And the people who are out there pushing it, I'm sorry, the people who I saw out there pushing it all had long hippie hair. All had dreadlocks. All were wearing tie-dyed shirts.
All worked at McDonald's.
All were probably smoking out after I finished going, huh, whatever, in their face. The thing is that the people who were for it were definitely the hippie liberal types that obviously had no real-life job skills to get any kind of real job because they've taken every opportunity that they've had for granted thus far, because rather than work, they'd much rather, you know, put in a little bit of time and go out and smoke their doobage and play hacky sack and eat granola and stuff like that.
Granola.
By the way, well, you know, if you want to get in on this, our phone number is 509-335-2207.
But see, they've got it all worked out, because you got to give them more credit here. If they raise the minimum wage and they get to keep their job, then they're making more money. If they get fired, then they get to go on welfare and they're making more money.
But that's the big if they get to keep their job.
But I just said, if they get fired, they get to go on welfare and they get more money. So it's win-win for them.
It is win-win. But it's lose-lose after a while for them.
It's lose-lose for the rest of the American people that are paying for it.
One thing I was going to just mention real quick, going back to the George Bush thing. Somebody who is in power does not need to go out there and make laws and do things in order to be good. As a matter of fact, I would argue that those in power who only make necessary laws and changes are the ones who are good, and those who are out there making changes for the sake of making changes are the ones who we need to worry about.
I will agree with that.
And the one
limited government.
And the other thing that I think also needs to get looked at is in the state of Washington right now, we're in this big pinch because of 695. We're looking at, what, an 18% increase in tuition, maybe more?
16 is what 16%. It's pretty much set in stone at 16.
Okay, so 16% increase in tuition. We're talking, roads aren't as good. Pullman Transit's still at risk.
Pullman Transit's going to die with the people we elected into ASWSU office. Well, I'll tell you that right now.
According to...
There's your prediction.
According to Mr. Dickinson, who I talked to, he had some ideas, and he talked about things that needed to be done, and I believe that if he follows through with those and he's able to at least help lead the way to getting those changes made, there's a possibility that it can still get saved.
I sure hope so. I hope he steals our ideas from us. I don't need credit for as long as it survives.
So then you got Pullman Transit issues. You have the city has the city has gone to every department in the whole city and said to them, okay, I need you to make a new budget showing what your department would be like with a 20% cut in revenue, or a 20% cut in your budget. And the fire department went through and they said, okay, a 20% cut would mean the reserve program is gone, Station 32 is gone, some of the new positions we just rehired are gone. Because by cutting the whole entire reserve program, which has about 25 firefighters, plus an engine, plus the rescue, plus that station, they spend less than $200,000 a year. And the budget itself is over $2 million. So less than 10% of the budget's not on reserves. So the reserve program would be an easy thing to cut, and it would save you $200,000. They need to look at saving $400,000. So then, and with a budget of 80-some percent of the money going for wages, obviously another easy place to cut is a couple jobs. But, of course, cutting those jobs means the service to the city would be decreased heavily. Same thing with the police department and all the other departments in the city. We're being told to do this. And a lot of this is all being blamed on I-695 and what it's done to the tax base in the state of Washington. And the only argument that I have, I mean, I agree that 695 did cut the tax base and is causing all these problems in all these cities. But in reality, maybe the reason why we have the problem is because we've allowed the government to get so bloated and so big that now that we're trying to get back in check, it's like, you know, how do we do this? You know, you look at the people in the city of Pullman, those workers get paid a lot of money, a lot more than they need to get paid, my belief. You know, if they got paid along the same lines as those people in the county, the city budget crisis would probably not exist. I mean, if they were to cut everybody's wages and go along with exactly what their counterpart in the county would get paid, like the police officers would be decreased by at least $1,000 a month, or right around there, $600 or $700 a month. Record specialists would be cut by a couple hundred dollars. Everybody would lose a couple hundred dollars a month, and over the whole entire city, that would be a lot of money, because not only are those wages being cut, but the taxes paid on those wages by the employer are being cut as well, because not as much money is being paid. Our budget crisis is over with. We've had so much money and the times have been so good for so long that we've allowed this unbridled spending just to go out of whack. And it's now coming back into...
We all know those salaries aren't going to be cut, though. So
Well, no, you're not going to cut salaries. So rather than, it's sort of like, you know, what we're asking them to do is cut off their nose or lose their whole entire head.
Yeah, but they're unionized. You go to the union and tell them that. They'll go on strike. The whole government will shut down. And they'll say, see,
good.
I told you.
They'll
now,
save money. No, but see,
it'll
that's the thing.
It'll cost money. That will cost money.
There are certain departments that cannot, by state law, go on strike. Police and fire cannot go on strike, even if they wanted to. But the thing is that all the other city workers could go on strike. But the thing is that all the city has to do is say, you know, we don't have the money to pay you guys. We're going to have to cut positions. And it's like, you know, if they take the overhanded position like that, saying, look, we got two choices, cut everybody's pay or say goodbye to some of your positions. What's your choice? You're going to either have people come together and say, look, you know, we want to keep everybody. We want to keep the level of service to the city up. We want to do everything. Let's go ahead and cut our wages. Or you're going to have people who are in seniority say, screw you.
No.
I don't want to cut my wages. I earned to get to this level.
You're thinking in too analytical, logical way. What they're going to do is they're going to say, well, we'll take the risk of losing people. And if you fire somebody, then we're all going to go on strike because we're all unionized and we don't want to see anybody lose. And then that whole department will shut down. That's how unions work. That's the reason they're so powerful. They don't work always in a logical, analytical way. They work to make sure that all of them get the best wages possible, which isn't always the best thing.
The union's not going to have any ability to stop them from contracting positions. You know, one of the things that is not negotiable typically in negotiations for salaries and stuff is for positions. You cannot, that's not a point that you negotiate on. You can negotiate on wages, you can negotiate on a lot of things, but you can't negotiate on the number of positions they have. So they could threaten strike, they could do all those things like that, but if they cut positions because they don't have the money, they have to cut the positions.
Who's going
to
cut those positions? The people in power? They could be voted out?
Yeah, by all the union members?
Well, you know what's funny about that, though, is that if you listen to Mr. Sherman and Mr. Thornton when they were here a few weeks ago, they're talking about how a lot of the city employees don't live in the city of Pullman. So they don't have a vote in the city council.
So why don't they do something then?
Good question. And that's the other question I have too. It's like, okay, if they don't live in the city of Pullman, they either live like maybe in Moscow, which would be comparable, a little bit less in taxes, or they're going to live somewhere else out in the county. And anywhere else out in the county, you're going to be actually paying a lot less to live. I mean, house prices are a lot cheaper out there, properties cheaper and everything else like that. Granted, you're going to have the commute time and the money for the gas and everything, but to buy a house out in the county that's comparable to the one in the city, you're probably going to be looking at 40 plus thousand cheaper for that house. And you might be able, for the same price, you're going to get a really nice house out there. So the thing is that if you look at all these people who are being paid by the city, who are leaving the city and taking the tax dollars with them out of the city, they're hurting the problem. You know, they have to look at themselves and say, you know, why aren't you living in the city?
What kind of gas are we talking about? 2 gallons each way? Maybe $2
each way per day? Well, it depends where you live. If you're talking Colfax, you're not even probably talking that much gas. If you're talking Winona, you're talking Steptoe, St. John.
Travel shouldn't be a factor then.
It should be. If you're talking St. John, you're talking a good 45-plus minute drive. If you're talking Roselia, or if you're talking La Crosse, you're talking even more time.
Well, when I went to high school in Renton, we had three teachers that commuted from Cle Elum. They were our PE department, and they commuted.
That's
they had
a
no
heck
problem
of a
doing
commute.
It.
That's
yeah,
a heck of
a commute. Commuting over those mountains.
And I'm, you know, there's people who I work with down in Colfax that commute from Spokane every day, and I'm just like, I don't know how you can do it. It's an hour plus drive. Then again, I guess if you compare it to living in Seattle, you know, you commute 20 miles and spend 2 hours in the car. So I don't see how there's that big of a difference. But it's still, you know, it's just the whole entire idea of it. It's
yeah, why do it if you don't have to?
Yeah, I agree.
Well, you know, just on Bush again real quick, another thing he's done that's really good is privatize Social Security. That was a big thing he said he'd do, and he's working on that. With tax cuts, he said he'd do that. He did.
Yes.
He's
following through.
Yeah.
Well, I guess he did do one good thing. He put a Little League field at the back of the White House. I was in full approval of that.
Okay. This is so the 695 definitely harmed the cities. I will not argue that. However, the only point I do argue is were the cities too bloated, and that's why they're being hurt so much? And is it the the contraction pains that, we're feeling right now, and that if we were to be on the level that we should have been on all along, we wouldn't be going through this right now. But, you know, in reality, it's cut services, cut people, or cut a little bit of both. You know, and you know, you got to sort of wonder what services the city's willing to cut.
That is true.
They said public service is their number one priority. So we'll see if they follow through with that, because that would mean police and fire is their number one priority. So,
well, there's only one way to find out.
Yeah, wait and see.
Yep.
Unfortunately. You know, I'm sure their 2002 budget, which we'd been going on for the last show, has been approved. So now they're talking, you know, working on the 2003 budget. That's going to be the interesting one to see what happens. Because I don't think the backfill money is going to be there. I think Locke said no. I think even the budget on that has been approved. So what's going to be interesting also is the city of Washtenaw. According to the mayor of the city, he said they're going to fold if the backfill money doesn't come into play. And the backfill money is not going to come into play. So I wonder if they're really going to fold up, or if the city's just going to go under some new management like Tim Einman thinks it should, since that person's obviously not able to run the city on that. But I think that the bottom line is that, and I'll say this forever, the people in the city of Pullman are paid more than this area will sustain. And you know, I'm not saying it's more than they're worth, because I'm not going to put a worth value on somebody's ability to work. But it's more than this area can sustain. And that leads one of two things. Either move out of this area to somewhere where they can pay you what you think you're that you think you should make, like go to Seattle, go to Spokane. And I'm sure once you do that, you'll realize that your commute time will go up, your money that you're spending on houses will go up and everything, and you'll realize that the amount of money you're making, even though it's comparable to what is here in Pullman right now, really isn't worth as much, because you got to spend so much more of it. So I think that, you know, our wages definitely need to go back in whack with what this city can handle. And I'm sure the city employees would totally disagree with me. And I'm sure if people were to say that about the county employees, since I'm one of them, I would disagree with them. Sort of funny how that works. Because the thing is that I just got a brand new county job. I'm going to start April 1st working for Whitman County full-time, and one thing that I can tell you is the amount of money I'm making there is several hundred, if not $1,000 off what could be made doing the same kind of job in the public sector, the private sector. But the fact that, that those kinds of jobs can't be found around here, I'm sort of stuck doing it in the public sector, unless I want to move back to Seattle, which is not an option to me. So I'm willing to make less money. But I can tell you that if I were to do this exact same job in Pullman, my rate of pay would go up about $800 a month. Simple as that. So anyway, sort of interesting how sports turned into Bush, turned into
Well, we Pullman. Can wind back to basketball and declare that the Eastern Conference isn't going to go anywhere this year. Every team had a major injury. Allen Iverson is out. Vince Carter decided to have surgery. Michael Jordan just had surgery. Tracy McGrady got sandwiched in between two players and hurt his back. We've lost the Eastern Conference now. It's whoever wins the West is going to win the basketball championship this year. So maybe Seattle has a good chance now.
I was going to ask
that would be awesome.
What the chances of Seattle taking it are.
They've improved a lot now.
All righty. Well, here's a here's an interesting political issue that just recently came up in the news. And I don't know, what time do you have to leave, Rhino?
Within 5 minutes.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and let me give a station ID. This is KZUU 90.7 FM. You're listening to the Peter Eichmann Show. Our website is www.informationtechnologyprofessionals.com/PES, as in the Peter Eichmann Show. You can reach us on the telephone at 509-335-2207. And you can get our message board at www.witsybanter.com. Okay. The first one is something that's been in the news lately. It actually happened a couple weeks ago, but it's just now getting in the news. The zero tolerance rules and laws are under fire after an expulsion of a honor student over a bread knife in Bradford, Texas. You know, obviously the zero tolerance policies and rules have been put in place because of the shootings in schools and stuff like that, and all the other violence and everything. So they're trying to make it so any kind of violent actions will have zero tolerance.
Yeah, but that's that's really stupid what they're doing here, because zero tolerance doesn't mean zero thought. Doesn't mean you don't think about what the person did.
And that's what
zero judgment.
Exactly.
I mean, the judgment of the person with all the factors are what's important. And the zero tolerance law, just as you said, was geared towards violent acts.
Exactly. And we will continue with that story in about 2 minutes, so stay tuned. You are listening to KCUU 90.7 FM, the Peter Eichmann Show. You have Scooter and Peter in the studio, and Rhino's on his way out the door. It's currently about 6 after 8 o'clock. You can reach us on the telephone at area code 509-335-2207, or you can get us on the web at www.informationtechnologyprofessionals.com/PES, as in the Peter Eichmann Show. Continuing with the story that we ended off the last hour with, an honor student expelled from high school for bringing a bread knife to school.
Yeah, in the back.
Under zero tolerance. Well,
of
here,
his pickup.
Let's go ahead and read the story before Peter spoils too much of it.
Well, no, I mean, I just want people to know just right off, if they have to go somewhere, whatever, that it wasn't like he was carrying it around in the hallways threatening people with it.
Even if he was. That doesn't mean zero tolerance should come into play. They should take him and suspend him and do all that kind of stuff. But the whole idea of zero tolerance,
it's
stupid. Okay, anyway. Taylor Hess says a 10-inch bread knife found by school security guards in the bed of his pickup was accidentally left behind from a box of personal belongings owned by his grandmother. But the knife could end up costing a 16-year-old honor student the rest of his junior year of high school. Hess was expelled from L.D. Bell High School 2 weeks ago under the state's zero-tolerance weapons policy. An appeal is set for Thursday. School officials said their hands are tied by the policy, despite the student's claim that the knife was left by accident after he and his father boxed up his grandmother's linens, books, and kitchenware to drop off at a Goodwill store. His father said the policy is misguided and leaves no room for extenuating circumstances. Zero tolerance does not mean zero judgment or rights, Robert has said. The superintendent of the Hearst Euless Bedford School District said Tuesday that Hess's expulsion was mandated by state education code. We're very limited in what we can do. I understand the public frustration. I'm frustrated too. Okay, so they're saying that the expulsion is mandated. They're very limited what they could do, which means that they actually have some
power.
Some
so their
power,
hands
which,
really aren't tied.
Which is sort of a question of what power they do have. Now, that was issued on 3/21. The next day, this article comes out, and it reads in part, the superintendent of the HEB school district said the state's zero-tolerance weapon policy left no room for leniency, but the district officials agreed Thursday to reduce the expulsion to the remainder of the school year to time served. So it's like, obviously they have power.
I was about to say, but if there's no room for leniency, how could they do that?
I don't know. Good question.
That's incredible.
It must
have been a miracle.
Well, it's asinine. They're sitting here telling us, well, we have no ability to do anything about it, but we're going to do something about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's idiotic. So the whole, first off, the whole entire idea of zero tolerance means you have zero
bread
common
knife
sense.
Really a weapon?
Could be. There's a lot of things that could be weapons, and bread knife is one.
Like
we're talking,
held somebody and started sawing
on
them?
No. Not a butter knife. A bread knife. An actual knife that is used to cut slices of bread.
A 10-inch blade. Okay, let me just speak. My bread knives at home that I actually have that are 10 inches, that is the proper length, have rounded edges and serrated blades.
This one was not serrated.
Okay.
And even if it was serrated, that stuff, I mean, they're sharp and they could cut.
Okay.
And they could
cut. That's what
I'm
saying. My bread knife at home, You couldn't stab somebody with it because it has a rounded bottom.
You could stab somebody with a rounded bottom.
Okay? It'd be like trying to stab somebody with a spoon.
No.
As far as the serrations go, they are sharp. You'd actually have to hold somebody there with physical force and start sawing on them.
No. Well, the thing is that with bread knives, you can, I mean, because they're rounded doesn't mean that they won't penetrate. And the thing is that they are very thin in width, so they're going to have some ability to penetrate. Now, through clothing, I doubt it. I'm sure you'd have to hit the right area of skin. You'd have to hit it at a very large
exertion. It would be like trying
force.
To attack somebody with
but,
a spoon.
But the point, no, it's not like, you're talking the difference between having a sharp blade and having rounded, smooth edges. There, I'm saying, I mean, the knife is and can be dangerous, but
so
is
can
it
a spoon?
No.
If you turn a spoon around and use
handle, no, you're looking
that
for
is deadly.
You're looking for an area of an argument, and I'm not trying to get an argument there.
I'm
because
not trying
the
to get an argument
is
either. I'm
yes,
just
you
making
are
a
because
a
no,
spoon
the,
can be deadly too, and they still allow them in cafeterias. A fork can be deadly too, and they still allow them in cafeterias. Zero tolerance. There's room for judgment in it, and people are taking
no.
It
there's
way
not room for judgment
seriously.
In zero tolerance.
Otherwise,
zero tolerance
forks
has
and
no
spoons
judgment.
Would not be
no.
allowed in schools.
There is
because even if you think that a fork or spoon isn't dangerous, as in the point that you actually put in your mouth, you can turn the handle around, and that's a dangerous weapon. It can be like a dagger.
No,
you know?
It can't. I mean, you're talking about an object that is very thick. We're talking.
Bread knives are not that thin.
Yes, they are.
Maybe if you buy cheap ones, you can wobble them. My bread knife doesn't wobble. It's like a spoon
but,
almost.
No, it.
Maybe I buy too good a quality bread knives. That could be it.
No, when you have a knife, you have, I mean, in order for there to be a sharp point, you have to get to a point where there's very little metal left. And are you saying that there's an area at the end of your bread knife where there's nothing, so it's like just a small section within that 10 inches?
Yes.
I doubt it.
I'm saying, okay, let me explain what my bread knife looked like. It's 10 inches long. On one end, you have a handle of wood, and then that goes around some metal, you know, normal handle. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then the bread knife is 10 inches long. The top is completely smooth. There's no sharp edge at the top. It's, mm-hmm. you know, about, what's that in inches?
Your finger keeps growing bigger. It started out at about maybe
right
an
here.
Eighth.
Right here.
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
That's right there.
Maybe it less, a little, right around an eighth of an inch.
Eighth of an inch. All right. It's about an eighth of an inch thick at the top, all the way around. And then it comes to an actual curve, mm-hmm. like a 180 degree curve. And that's completely still an eighth of an inch, no sharp edge. And then after you come in around that curve about a quarter inch, you get serrations. The serrations go all the way back until about a quarter inch from the handle. The serrations are sharp, I'll give you that. But there's nothing there that you could poke somebody with and stab unless you took a really
you
good
don't
long
have to, but with a
jab.
Knife, with a knife,
and
you
I'm
could
saying,
walk up, you could walk
and
up
I'm saying
behind.
That if you... I'm not arguing that you couldn't stab somebody with this knife if you really worked at it,
but
I'm saying you could do the same thing
either.
With a spoon.
No, and that's the thing is I disagree with. Because your spoon, you're not going to have the leverage that you're going to have with a knife in order to be able to make a stab because you got a smaller object and you don't have a proper handle. With a knife, you got a better object with an easier way of stabbing somebody. Also
and
with
a fork.
And the same thing with the fork. The fork's a smaller object. But the thing is, with a knife, you can walk up behind somebody with a knife and slash it across their throat and cause major damage, and it has nothing to do with stabbing it in somebody. And that's the thing. Is
I don't
is
think you could with
knife,
my bread knife, though.
But
you'd really have
yes,
to start sawing.
No,
one
you don't
slice
have to
would
start
not do it.
You obviously had some very poor quality bread knives because in order to cut bread, you have to have a sharp knife in order for it to cut
they're
through
serrations.
Without you
here's
smashing
the, here's the good
without,
thing about serrations.
This was
serrations
an unserrated
saw.
One. This was unserrated. There were no serrations. It had to have been a sharp knife to cut bread. The point I'm getting at is that you have a knife, something that's meant to cut people, whether it's a small razor blade, which you wouldn't jab into somebody, you'd actually use it to cut their neck. Or a box cutter, which is the same thing. You don't use that to stab, because if you did, you're talking maybe a quarter inch. You have a blade that can use to slice people. It is a dangerous thing if it's used as a weapon. And that's what I'm getting at. The thing is that to really use a spoon as a weapon in the kind of way you're saying is ludicrous, insane, and idiotic. It cannot be done. The point is
no,
that the knife was in the back of the truck, and the knife could be, if it was wanted to be used as a weapon, could be technically a weapon. Now, is a bread knife in the back of a pickup truck in the parking lot somewhere really a weapon that needs to be concerned with?
I'm glad you decided not to argue with me.
About what?
Nothing.
Okay. Anyway, the point is that I think you're just trying to play devil's advocate.
No,
I don't think
I'm serious in saying
that with some of the zero tolerance policies that have been enforced, that a spoon or a fork really is just as dangerous, or if not more dangerous, than a lot of the things that zero tolerance has
But I would agree with you there, but you weren't...
No, I know. I started out saying...
At that time, you were not talking about that. You were trying to compare a spoon and a knife.
I know, and I still think that a spoon is deadly, but it's not as deadly as a knife. I'll give you that.
Oh, my goodness. You're crazy. That's like saying a chicken nugget is deadly if you can stuff it down their throat and choke them with it.
No, no, no. A spoon, you could hurt somebody with really bad.
Oh, whatever.
And a fork, even easier.
I could see a fork because there's several sharp tongs, but you're not going to get very much penetration with the fork due to the fact of how close they are together and the fact that they are relatively thick. You're going to get some penetration, but not a lot.
Or a pen. Pens are really deadly. You can stab someone in the neck with a pen and they'll drown on their own blood.
Oh, wow.
Sort of gruesome.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that could be deadly, Peter, but...
And they allow them in school.
We're here in real life now. Let's go back to real life. Let's come back down to Earth and let's talk about... a difference between a knife, which is a very easy-to-use weapon that doesn't take any kind of special luck training getting real close to somebody, versus a spoon, if you turn around, yeah, you can throw knives.
Oh, yeah, you can throw a bread knife.
I'm just saying you can throw knives. You could throw a spoon at somebody, you're probably not going to kill them.
You can throw a bread knife at somebody, and you're probably not going to kill them.
Probably not. But you can throw, there's a lot of knives you can throw at people that would kill them. So you don't
there
have
are
to
a lot
get,
of knives.
You don't
if you pull
have
out
to
a gun,
close.
You can shoot them, too.
You don't have
if you pull
to.
Out a nuclear bomb, you could kill everybody in
and
a
you
radius.
Don't have to get close to them is what I'm getting at.
With
the spoon,
with a bread knife,
there's only the only way you could, in your twisted, skewed world, the only way you could kill somebody with a spoon is if you got up next to them, somehow turned it around, was able to hold on to the
somehow
the spoon.
Turned it around? You don't know how to turn around a spoon?
I was getting somewhere.
Okay.
And
I'm
somehow
sorry.
Turn it around and get it in your hand where the spoon part, the part that actually holds the item that you're eating, is in your hand and be able to hold on to that with any kind of ability to add any force to it without it causing injury to your hand or slipping through. And then somehow try to stab somebody with
it. Or a fork
with
it. Or a pen. And you could do it.
Okay, coming back to reality now.
No, I'm serious.
Coming back to reality now.
This is reality.
No, it's not reality. It's Peter and his little world trying to make points that don't need to be made. The thing is that anybody can find weapons in anything. The fact you're pointing it out like that and some of the arguments you're trying to make are insane.
No.
The thing is, they can be weapons,
and I'm saying that's why
no
zero
kidding.
Tolerance. It shows that zero tolerance, there is some judgment there that people are... can say, well, this is a weapon and this isn't. And what all I'm getting at is that with a zero tolerance policy, which is completely, as you said, asinine and stupid, and you get all these people that are making all these double-sided statements, just as you pointed out earlier in the article, our hands are tied, but we decided not to punish them. You know, I'm saying zero tolerance, as often as anybody says that they can't do anything about it.
You've got to realize they also define what a weapon is.
That there's a lot of things that can be
a weapon. But the thing is, they define what a weapon is.
Okay.
And I'm sure in that definition,
people,
a lot of those things, like you're talking about spoons and evil
gotten,
looks.
Okay, people
and
have gotten thrown.
And
people
pieces
have
of paper
out,
and everything else like that are probably not included in that.
People have gotten thrown out of school under the zero tolerance, which I'm putting in quotes here in the studio, zero tolerance policy, have included things like bringing nail files to school, because those are dangerous weapons, no more dangerous than a fork. They've included people pointing their finger at someone and going bang, bang, which is certainly a lot less dangerous than a bread knife, a fork, a spoon, a pen, or anything like that.
But that message is portraying is one
while playing cowboys and Indians. I'm talking about second graders.
Okay.
I'm not talking about someone who looks at you evilly and is like, I'm going to kill you. Bang, bang. You know, I'm talking about cowboys and Indians, a second grade game, kids are running around.
Well, they should be allowed to play cowboys and Indians anyway. That's
and they're getting suspended for stuff like that. Those are considered weapons. They must be considered weapons under the zero tolerance law because they've been kicked out under the zero tolerance law for that. And I'm saying if you can be kicked out for playing a cowboys and Indians game and pointing a finger at someone and moving your thumb like bang, bang, then you should be kicked out for having a pen, a fork, a spoon because they can all be dangerous weapons.
Okay.
And that is reality.
In your skewed little argument, once again, we'll go ahead and we'll talk about the reality of a bread knife and the fact that it is a true and immediate weapon that could be used as a weapon in anybody's hands, not just a special trained GI.
Doesn't take a special trained GI
or
to stab somebody with a fork.
And you're not going to kill somebody with the fork either.
Really?
Yes.
I'll bet I could kill somebody with the fork.
Okay. And where would you stab them?
In the throat.
Why?
Because in the throat from the side.
Why?
Because you have veins there.
Oh, so you know what to do with it then, is what you're saying. You're trained how to use a fork.
Oh, I'm trained in how
to
use a fork. No, I'm
not. I can tell you that anybody knows how to use a knife.
I can tell you.
Anybody knows how to use a knife.
I can tell you that when anybody who knows how to use a knife slashes at the throat, it's because they know.
Because they've seen it in the movies.
Because they know that
with the fork,
you have to have blood going to your brain and that you breathe right here.
They
know that if they cut right here.
No, they know that if they cut there, they've seen people in the movies die that way, so therefore it must be real.
There you go.
But you don't see people in the movies killing people with forks, so you'd have no clue. You'd sit there and look at it and go, gosh, where can I stab somebody? Maybe in the eye. I'll poke their eyes out. Maybe they'll die because of that. Maybe I'll poke it in their ribs. Maybe they'll die because I get to their lung and puncture their lung. Or I'll try to get to their heart by poking it through their ribs. They won't. But you're specially trained, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I'm specially trained because I know that there's blood that goes through the brain.
No,
and
because
you know, windpipe.
But no, because you showed how you would stab it. You said you'd come in it right here, which I'm sort of pointing underneath my chin at an angle to my windpipe and my
arteries. I saw it in a movie, of course.
Oh, yeah. What movie was it that you saw somebody use a fork to stab somebody?
It was in a lot of movies. I think it was in, like, Natural Born
Killers. Oh, it was a lot of movies, huh?
Yes. I think Natural Born Killers had something like that.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Have you ever seen that?
Yes.
I think they did.
No, I don't think they did.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I think
no.
they did.
And I doubt second graders are watching that movie.
I doubt second graders are watching that movie, too.
Exactly. So they still wouldn't know how to use a fork to kill somebody, would they?
But, you know, a lot of people are concerned now about bombs and stuff in, like, 7th
right.
and 8th grade. 7th mm-hmm. and 8th graders should know how to make mm-hmm. bombs. If they know how to make bombs, why do you think that they don't know how to stab somebody with a fork? Bombs are a lot more complicated.
No, they're not.
You don't think bombs aren't more complicated than taking a fork and stabbing somebody in the throat?
It'd be a lot easier to make a bomb than it would be to kill somebody with a fork.
I don't think so.
Simple as that. Yes. Yes. It is a lot easier to make a bomb than it is to kill somebody with a fork.
Sounds like you have experience. That's a direct statement you're making there, like, from personal experience, right?
Well, put it this way. I know how to make a bomb. It's easy.
Okay.
To kill somebody with a fork, I can just imagine how hard it would be and how many times I'd need to stab somebody in order for them to actually die, either due to blood loss or me actually hitting something that would kill him instantly.
I like the idea that me actually hitting something, and then he moves his head and rolls his eyes like, that's impossible. Where could I hit on the human body with a fork? What could I penetrate that
exactly.
would kill somebody?
What can you penetrate with a fork
oh
that's going
gosh.
To kill somebody? You're talking the ability to dive it in maybe 3/4 of an inch. You're not going to be hitting a lot of vital organs at 3/4 of an inch. Maybe if you plunge it in and get up after it's plunged in and somehow get up and start stomping on it and stuff, it might get pushed
in. You don't think
far
a fork
enough.
Would go in more than 3/4 of an inch?
Under a normal person.
What kind of fork
Under a normal person taking it and doing a stabbing type motion with it, because the fact the tines get more and more thin at one end and they get.
No,
they get,
I understand
they get
the layout
between,
of a fork, but forks are usually, you know, like that long as far as the. Points
you're
go.
Right, but once again,
and they don't really start getting
first
thin
off,
until the last.
No, first off, the tines themselves on typical forks are probably going to be about an inch and a half long.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay,
let me apologize here. I got us way off subject.
Okay.
I apologize.
The tines
Let's
on
get
a fork
back to the article.
Are going to be about an inch and a half long.
As soon as you
at
say
the
this.
Very beginning, they start out very very thin, not quite needle points, but close to
yes,
being pointed.
You're right.
And as they go down,
and they get much thinner.
They get
to where they become solid metal. I understand.
No,
what
you're
saying.
I wasn't talking about that.
Okay.
That's the space between. The tines themselves get really thick, and the space between gets really thin really quick. The thing is, in order for you to, under normal energy from your hand, to be able to stab that in, you're going to come down to that point, and you're all of a sudden going to stop, and it's not going to be able to go in any further without you getting some sort of extra force behind several more
I was
stabs.
Saying
so
that
the point I'm getting
the first
at is,
stab, I think, would go in more than 3/4 of an inch.
I don't think it
would.
No.
Okay.
How would it go in more
I'm
than
sorry.
Three
it would.
Inch?
Okay. Let me retract my statement. A fork is not really a deadly weapon, and if by some way, shape, or form you are a professional hitman and can get it in, it probably would not go in more than 3/4 of an inch. I apologize to our audience for having to listen to this stupid conversation, which I admit I did start.
Yes, you
and
did.
And would you please turn and let's read the article, because this really
sure.
is a good article about something ludicrous that happened.
I agree.
All right,
and
let us continue.
Unfortunately, we had to go off to some tangent. But thank you for... stopping that tangent there, Mr. Peterman. Anyway, that was the end of the article. Anyway, okay, second article, though. Let's just go on from there, because and this time maybe let's not play devil's advocate.
Well, the zero-tolerance policy really is stupid. I mean, to say that there's no judgment involved whatsoever, the knife was in the back of a pickup truck.
Right.
And that's not an intentional place to leave something anyways. Right. If I was going to have a knife, I'd have it on me or under a seat or something, not just open, in the back of a pickup, laying loosely, like it was just dropped there.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely ludicrous that someone would call him on that and say that he was threatening somebody and that he had a weapon.
Well, they didn't say he was threatening anybody. They just said he was in possession of a weapon on school grounds.
And it's just ludicrous to think that that's something to kick someone out for.
Yeah.
So
anyway, yeah, it's one of those things. The idea of zero tolerance takes zero common sense.
Yes.
And the problem is,
like they said, zero judgment.
We are zero common sense, and that's the thing is that you need to look at is zero common sense. We are breeding common sense out of existence.
Oh yeah,
we are making it so there is no common sense anymore.
No judgment. It's all the rules, all the laws, all the
things that you have to put like on the side of cigarette packages and all the warnings you have on everything. I mean, look at the bottom of a keyboard. There's a warning that you could get carpal tunnel syndrome or other kinds of illnesses by using it for an extent. And it's just like we've gone to a society where you have to have some sort of warning for everything. There's no common sense anymore. We're breeding it out of society. And zero tolerance is working to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't have to have a zero tolerance policy to bust somebody for having a weapon on campus. Somebody's carrying a gun in their waistband. Somebody's carrying a knife in their waistband. Somebody pulls out a knife and threatens somebody with it. You don't need zero tolerance to kick them out of school.
No, you don't.
You kick them out of school. Simple as that.
Well, see, zero tolerance attempts to make a black and white statement, and there are very few things in this world that are black and white. Maybe the fact that, you know, from the moment you're born, you start dying. That's black and white, you know.
You don't start dying until you die.
Yeah.
Because you just started living.
That's black and white. I mean, but there's nothing else in this world, or one or two maybe, things that are black and white. Everything is gray and different shades of gray. And to have a law that just puts everything perfectly black and white under no circumstances
but it's not
will
black.
It change.
And as you saw, it's not black and white because they have little area.
Because, yes, you know, they reduce the punishment. So they're proving that their own law isn't black and white, but it was an attempt to make black and white. And it failed miserably because, like I said, things are gray in this world.
Okay, this one I think we might get in a natural argument for. We don't have to come up with anything that we disagree with here. Lawsuit over teen's suicide goes to court.
Lawsuit over teen suicide goes to court. Oh, I'm intrigued. Keep going.
Okay. This is from Mary Claire Doyle, Dale from the Associated Press.
Oh, good. I was going to say, this wasn't from The Onion or anything.
No. No, there's this great article on suicide in The Onion that Peter and I read one night and we were rolling. Anyway, Philadelphia, 1997, an 18-year-old high school football player in Minersville and a 17-year-old friend were stopped by police after leaving a party. Police charged the boys with underage drinking, and after finding the younger one with two condoms, then took him to the station where they were lectured on the Bible and homosexuality. The arresting officer, F. Scott Wilinski, allegedly asked if they were queer and threatened to tell their families they were gay. Marcus Wayman, the football player, told his friend he was going to kill himself. A few hours later, he did just that. Today, a lawsuit filed by Wayman's mother over her son's death went to trial in federal court in Allentown. The lawsuit, which seeks unspecified damages, charged the town and three of its police officers violated Wayman's right to privacy. This is the first case that we know of after a tragic result like this. A family comes back and tries to hold a public entity accountable for trying to out them, said Eric Ferriero, a spokesman for the Gay and Lesbian Rights Project of the American Civil Liberties Union, which represents Wayman's mother. Federal court sides with privacy. In an important pretrial decision, a federal appeals court in Philadelphia ruled last year that a person's constitutional right to privacy includes protection of his or her sexual orientation. The court also said that threatening to disclose the information was tantamount to doing so because the security of one's privacy has been compromised by the threat. The dispute over statements. Scott Wilininski, later testified that the boys conceded under questioning that they had stopped to have sex. The 17-year-old disputes making that statement. Walensky told Wayman that if he didn't tell his grandfather he was gay, Walensky would do so, according to the lawsuit. Later that morning, police dropped Wayman off at home at the home he shared with his grandfather. At his home, Marcus Wayman secured a firearm in the house and sometime before 6 a.m. committed suicide, the lawsuit states. Policing and parental overtones. According to Ferraro, many school officials, social workers, and others feel they have a duty to share the information with parents when they learn that a teenager may be gay. Walensky made a similar argument in court. Walensky offers that as a small-town police officer, his role is a parental overtones, thus reducing the citizen's expectation of privacy. We mention this only to our note, only to note our disagreement with the concept that the breadth of one's constitutional rights can somehow be diminished by demographics. Circuit Judge Carol Loss, man's man, wrote in the opinion. Minersville population is 4,900. It's a rural area about 100 miles northwest of Philadelphia. For a gay teen, the disclosure of his or her sexual orientation can be traumatic, even dangerous, Ferraro said. Coming out is the single most significant moment of their lives, especially when they're still in high school, and to be forced Ferraro said. It can be extraordinarily traumatic, especially if maybe the family is not supportive. So you have...
Okay, real quick. I missed the age of the kid. Would you?
One was 17, one was 18.
Okay, which one was 17?
The 17-year-old was the one who did not commit suicide. The 18-year-old committed suicide.
Okay.
So essentially you have a police officer who lectures to people on homosexuality in the Bible.
Okay.
And threatens that if they don't come out to their parents, that the police officer will then tell the parents. And one kid, due to the traumatic experience, decides that rather than face his parents and face the world of an outed teen, he's going to kill himself.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's,
and the police are, of course, liable for that.
Here's the thing, and this may even surprise you, but here's my views on all of this here.
Oh, my God. Don't even agree with me here. I'll have a heart attack on the spot.
Well, I'm starting, so you'll be agreeing with me.
I'm getting a heart attack.
Okay. Let's start here. As far as the police officer lecturing them on the Bible and homosexuality, although I'm sure I probably would agree with the police officer, I don't think that it's his place to do that. Okay, that's the first point. I don't think it's the police's place to be lecturing people on the Bible. Okay. They're there to enforce the laws.
Okay.
I don't even think that the police are there to protect people. They're there to enforce the laws.
Okay.
Okay? So I disagree with what he did the first point. The second point of whether or not your sexual orientation is a privacy issue and constitutionally protected, I think as a minor, it's not. Because as a minor, you lose a lot of things in privacy issue. And your parents or grandparents, whoever your guardians or legal guardians know. It's like in school. You know, if you commit some sort of offense at school, get detention, it goes home. Yeah, that could be a privacy issue, but it still goes home to your parents or your legal guardian because they are responsible for you and they need to know everything to fulfill their duty and role as a parental guardian in upbringing you. So as the 17-year-old, I think since he was a minor, the policeman call it his duty, but I don't see anything constitutionally wrong with the policeman telling a parent or guardian something like that. As far as the 18-year-old goes, this is where I thought I might shock you. Since he's legally an adult, I can see that as a privacy issue. And the police officer threatening to tell somebody is a violation of privacy. If that's, I don't know enough about the case or even from the facts there that that's exactly why the kid committed suicide, if there wasn't more to it than that. So to say that I think the officer is liable is a whole other issue. But as far as for the suicide. Okay. But as far as the privacy issue goes, I think he is.
According to the article, the officer said, if you don't tell him, I will.
Yeah, that's what
I'm
saying.
And the kid at that point said, I'm going to kill myself.
But I don't know if that was a culmination of events or if that event there is why he decided to kill himself. I mean, just because he says, I'm going to kill myself, I don't know if there was a bunch of things going through his head. He'd had a terrible life. He didn't like what was happening with his friends. His girlfriend just dumped him because she found out he was gay or whatever. Or his boyfriend dumped him. Whatever. Okay? Here's what I'm saying. I don't know that there wasn't...
I'm your girlfriend, and now that you're gay, I'm dumping you.
Yeah, whatever.
I would think it'd be the other way around.
Way around, okay. I don't know that there wasn't something going on there that added to this. So I don't know if the police officer should be held liable for the suicide, but he very well could be.
And I
but
guess
as far
that's
as the privacy issue goes,
out,
exactly. I think bringing it to court was... Oh, it's hard for me to say this. I think it was actually a good move because it was a violation of his privacy as an adult.
Right. And it's sort of interesting. There's in the state of Washington, there's a law that actually makes it a felony to harass somebody, something along the lines of do with sexual orientation and stuff like that. And the reason why I say that is I know somebody who was in Pullman a couple years ago. Who was confronted and physical abuse was being threatened and everything because he was gay or because mm-hmm. he was perceived to be gay. And the law says that you can't do that. And there's like a Class C felony if you mm-hmm. do that kind of thing. Well, anyway, this guy flags down a police officer going by and says, hey, you know, this guy's doing this kind of thing. And there's a law that says he can't do that if they perceive you, if you're not gay and somebody does that to you and because they perceive you're gay, they're still as guilty as if you were gay. Anyway, in the case of this situation, and the reason why I bring it up is the privacy issues that this person's like, hey, this guy is trying to beat me up because he thinks I'm gay. So the officer does do something about it, but forces that person to disclose whether he's gay or not. And that person's like, it doesn't matter. The law says if he perceives me to be gay or whatever, it can happen. And the cop would not do anything unless he revealed his true sexual orientation, which, you know, definitely goes back to a privacy issue. Which I thought I would just...
There's some instances. I'm not saying that's one of them. I disagree with that. If the law says that... I mean, whether I disagree with the law or not, if the law says that, then he should be following it.
Right.
And so I disagree with that. I will admit there are some privacy issues that get put aside for special circumstances, but those are rare, usually in court. As far as that law goes, I think it's sort of ridiculous that there has to be a law like that. I mean, it's already against the law to harass people, and that should just fall under it rather than being a special law by itself. I mean, to harass somebody and threaten physical harm or have a perceived threat of physical harm.
What would you say if it was part of that law, but it's just a subsection?
That wouldn't bother me at all.
Okay, I'm just curious.
No, it wouldn't bother me at all. Just adding to it to make it more specific, the law itself. You know, the subsections just help define it more clearly. Harassment's illegal, and so harassment for any reason, you know, it's still illegal. And perceived threats or actual threats fall under harassment. So that's it. That's how I feel on that.
Now, let me ask you a question. Going with another issue now, this is sort of technology related, mm-hmm. And it goes with, I guess, rights. Kmart, I don't know what it was now, about a year ago or so, came out and said they're no longer going to sell ammunition or anything like that in the Kmart stores.
Yep, I remember that.
And let me ask you a question. Now, let's say you were here in Pullman and you lived on one end of town. Or let's say you're in a big city somewhere, you lived on one end of town. And on your end of town, there was a Kmart. And on the other end of town, there was, say, a Walmart or a Target or something like that. And you need to buy something that store specialized in for the low prices. Would you go to the local Kmart? Or would you drive across town to one of the other stores because of the policy Kmart has?
I would drive across town to one of the other stores.
I thought you would. Now, let me ask you a question. Let's say there's a website that refuses to put gun ads on, even though somebody wanted to put a gun ad. And it wasn't even a gun ad. It was an ad that had sporting goods, backpacks, and sold things like gun sights. Not sights, mm-hmm. but scopes and stuff like that. Didn't actually sell the guns. And this website refuses to place those ads on their website. Would you go to that website anymore?
Most likely not.
Okay. You want to know what website it is?
I do now, because I know you were setting me up. I'm just dying to know what website.
Okay. Whenever I go to your room and I do a search on something, I go to yahoo.com, right? And you hate that. Why do you use that? Google is so much better.
Yeah.
You'll never guess who will not let those ads be up on their list.
Google.
Yes.
All right. Well,
how do you feel about that?
I don't like that at all.
You don't like that.
And I will be changing my thing when I get home. Yeah. The reason I said mostly is because there are some sites, such as my news sites,
yeah,
like New York Times, that sort of thing, that whether they do it or not, I can hate it. I can call them liberal. I can do whatever I want.
But they are liberal, so you already know going in, right?
Yeah. But I have to have news sources, yeah, and I like getting it from all sides,
yeah,
to get a better story. That's so why I say mostly. But things like Google, they're off my machine.
See, I thought that was interesting, though, because they would not allow this ad because it wasn't even straight up gun sales. It was
just accessories.
Accessories.
Yeah.
And they're like, nope.
That's ridiculous. You know, that's really too bad, because I just downloaded this little web bar from Google, and it has one of the searches that goes under that.
You know,
that was so nice.
There's actually a website I'll give you. It's actually something like www.thescreensavers.com. It's a show from this TV channel, Tech TV. One good thing that came out of my 27-hour trip to Seattle on spring break was the opportunity to watch Tech TV. And I would ask that everybody get and call the local cable company and say, we want Tech TV right here. It's a good channel,
yeah,
a lot of tech stuff. And and in this one situation, there's they have this show called The Screensavers, and it's really cool. It's sort of like CNET TV show and stuff like that. It goes through tech things, and
yeah,
it gives you things.
I've heard of that.
Well, they showed the site, and it does something like what Google had for its like little web bar thing,
mm-hmm,
and it's the same kind of bar thing. But what's really cool is you could type in search stuff, and then there's like a pull down menu, and it will go and it will search like some of the major search areas real quick, and you can. It's a pretty neat little setup and everything. And I'll go ahead and
I'll be real happy
try to
that.
Find that for you and everything like that. But
I'll be
I thought that was sort of interesting.
You
about
know, with Kmart, I was so upset when they did that, because they felt that handguns were just a major cause of violence, and that they would stop selling ammunition because all of us must be guilty, since handguns are such a major source of violence. Because they were quoting handguns. I remember reading the article from the executive.
I just wonder who they were trying to appease
because,
by doing
well, there was
that,
a protest. Some people were picketing and protesting, and they had a big support from them. I think the Brady Campaign Against Violence.
I'm sure it was.
Was supporting them.
And
so
obviously
they said,
the Brady people have been supporting Kmart ever so highly ever since this, because Kmart's now in
bankruptcy. Yeah,
which,
you got to love that. I'd like to think that they were related, that so many people were so upset that they left, but I'm not that naive.
Yeah.
There were other reasons.
Yeah.
But I was one of the people who just – I didn't go there much anyways because they're never really around my area. But as soon as I heard that, I made it a point not to go there, period, no matter where they were.
Yeah.
Because that's so – it's upsetting when a store takes a stand like that for no good reason.
Yeah.
Just because they feel like appeasing some small group.
Some interest group. And obviously it's not helped them at all.
No, it hasn't.
It's just you like you said, it's almost maddening in some ways that, you know, they go off and try to do these little tangents like that and try to make people all happy and everything, and you know, as much as, you know, Kmart's been around for a long time, and, you know, granted I don't go there a lot and everything, but I hate to see a large corporation like that go into bankruptcy and, you know, and lose another large chain store like that. But at the same time, if you have management who is going to be so incompetent to do stupid things like that, you know, the shareholders have got to get together and say, you're out of here, buddy.
Absolutely.
The shareholders need to get together and oust those people get proper people in.
If you have management that, like you said, you just hit it right on the nose. If the management is that incompetent, you know that they're incompetent in other areas. And it should have just been a sign. But everybody seemed to be pleased that, oh, no, they're not selling handguns. And so everybody stayed, and then they filed bankruptcy. Serves them right, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's sort of the view I'm taking in some ways. It serves them right, but at the same time, I hate to see a big chain go under because of that.
Yeah,
you know, sort of like a lesson learned, but it cost, you know, that kind of thing. Netscape gets... go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that with the whole gun control issue, sort of Kmart's a good example. people no longer, just real quick tangent here, in fact, not even a tangent, people no longer have the view of justice when it comes to handguns. It's not something like you're innocent until proven guilty. It's all preventative justice, which is an oxymoron. And they're saying you're all guilty, and so we're not just not going to sell it to you. And it's so annoying. You know, the idea of preventative justice is an oxymoron. Justice is the idea that you did something wrong, and now you're being punished for it. Preventative justice would be like, we think you're going to do something wrong, and we're going to go ahead and take measures now to make sure that even if you don't do it, you can't do it, period. And it's just ridiculous. And that's what a lot of things, that's the path a lot of things are taking today. But with gun control, it just really upsets me.
Okay. Break in when you know the answer to this question.
Okay, should I just turn off my mic now, or?
No.
Okay.
No. Okay. This is written by Sheldon Richman, March of 2002, and I got it from www.fff.org. Imagine the nerve of a company that gives away its product in an attempt to knock off the dominant firm in the industry. I have one such company in mind right now. It went all out to make it easy for customers to have free access to its product. You couldn't turn around without being handed gratis this company's goods. When the dust settled, the new company was number one and the old leader relegated to also-ran status. Do you have any idea what we're talking about yet?
Something to do with the computer industry.
Okay.
Is it hardware or software?
Software.
Microsoft?
Hey, no.
Okay, I don't know. That's just what, you know, whenever someone says software, you got to throw out Microsoft.
Well, I mean, if you listen to everything there, I think that's what most people would believe. But no, I'm not thinking of Microsoft in its effort to dethrone the web browser Netscape Navigator with Internet Explorer. I'm thinking of America Online's move against CompuServe as an Internet service provider. It's more than just a little ironic that AOL Time Warner now owns Netscape and has just filed an antitrust suit against Microsoft for doing just what AOL did to CompuServe.
I love that.
AOL Time Warner Netscape should be given the Green W Award. I just made up for being the biggest corporate whiner in the country. And in parentheses, he says, the competition for that distinction is fierce. The American business ethic today is those who can, do. Those who can't, cry to government.
Yep. That is so true.
What is Microsoft's grave offense? Netscape says that Navigator lost favor in the market because Microsoft began to give away an Internet Explorer as part of its Windows operating system. Did Microsoft blow up Netscape's facilities? No. Did it infiltrate Netscape's operations and sabotage them? No. Did it stop anyone from using Netscape Navigator rather than Internet Explorer? Well, no. Microsoft didn't do that either. All it did was make Internet Explorer a feature of Windows. That's it. In America today, that might be an offense for which one can be assessed treble damages. At least Netscape hopes so. What makes people think that Microsoft did something bad is that it supplies the market's most popular operating system. That enables Microsoft to bundle Internet Explorer with Windows and gain a supposed unfair advantage over its competitors.
That is just absolute crap.
The devastating question for Netscape. So what? Why is it unfair? To whom? Certainly not to consumers.
Exactly. They got that right. If anybody out there has ever used Netscape and compared it to Internet Explorer, you'll know why Internet Explorer is being used.
They also compare it. They apparently like the convenience of having the browser integrated with the operating system. It surely reduces the hassle. Had Internet Explorer not been a good browser, Microsoft's strategy would have counted for naught. Netscape had nearly the entire market share to itself, even after consumers received Internet Explorer for free. Earlier versions of Microsoft's product were not impressive, and the consumers were able to use Netscape with Windows. They still can. Only when a later version of Internet Explorer began to impress software reviewers did consumers give it another look and turn to it in greater numbers. In contrast, Windows has not helped Microsoft bring its own Internet Service Provider, MSN, to dominance. Netscape lost the market on the merits, not because of any quote-unquote unfair advantage. Think of what it would mean if Netscape gets its way. Government would be the ultimate judge of what can go into a computer operating system, where it's written that a browser is not part of the operating system. Where is it written that the browser is not part of the operating system? There was a time when disk, video, and printers weren't part of the operating system either. Should we be forced to live by standards of days of early personal computing? And why should Netscape's principle be limited to operating systems? The principle could give government power the power to define all products. If an automobile comes with a CD player, you're less likely to buy some other company's player. Why isn't that unfair? Examples could be multiplied endlessly. It does not take much imagination to see what life would be like if the government had the power AOL Time Warner is asking it to assume. The marketplace exists for the benefit of consumers, not producers. This isn't athletic competition where the object is to see who is best on a level playing field. This is economic competition where the consumers want producers to exploit every advantage in order to better serve them. Any peaceful act to satisfy consumers is ipso facto fair. AOL Time Warner Netscape is thus revealed as an enemy of freedom and progress. The thing that I loved.
Boy, I like that. Who wrote that?
Let me go back up to his name. It was something like Sheldon. Get back up there. Sheldon Richmond.
Wow. Oh, I like that guy.
Obviously, the link could be found on our website
yeah.
to this. The part that I really liked was where he was talking about Internet Explorer and the earlier versions of Internet Explorer, how it was a terrible program
yeah.
IE 3.0 sucked.
Mm-hmm.
I used Netscape for a long time because Netscape was by far a superior browser. But Netscape did some things that I really did not like. A, it became bloated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest thing against Netscape that I can find. It has become so bloated, it's not even funny. It's huge. You don't need it to be that big to be a web browser.
Yeah.
Real Entertainment or Real Network does the same kind of thing. They have a player that could be nice and small and compact, but no, they give you
all this other junk that you don't need.
And I can't even run it on my machine because it always locks my machine up. It's a worthless program. I don't use Real Network stuff because it's worthless as far as I'm concerned. So you have this bloated application that just sucks. And then you have Internet Explorer that went from 3.0 to 4.0 and made a huge jump to being a good program. And actually,
I was just going to say, a lot of stuff on the Internet, well, not a lot, but there are still sites on the Internet and some fairly big ones, I know, always downloading drivers for my hardware that rarely works, that do not support Netscape. I had a Netscape browser for a while on my laptop because I was having difficulties with Windows.
Well, I think those companies should be sued as well because they're being anti-competition.
Oh, absolutely. They're being anti-Netscape, absolutely, because when I went to their website, I couldn't click on certain links and buttons because they weren't Netscape compatible.
Also, Netscape is being anti-competitive when it comes to VBScript because no VBScript works in Netscape.
Yeah.
So we're forced to use Java, and that's not what I want to use. I want to use VBScript. Mm-hmm. And that's a big reason why I like it IE so much, is because they allow you to use VBScript. They allow you to use JavaScript and work both.
Anybody who says that Microsoft's anti-competition, anti-competitive, you can just look at the stuff that they include and then look at all the stuff that they allow you to download. And I'm going to say allow because everybody says that Microsoft's so anti-competitive they don't allow anything. You know, they allow you to download the JavaScript applet and plugins and so that it'll work there. They don't say, no, you can't use it, period, like a certain program I know,
money.
Like, say, Netscape.
Yeah. We refuse to acknowledge the fact that VBScript is something that's used, so we'll not put it on our thing and then wonder why people who build websites don't build them for Netscape.
Yeah, no kidding.
When I do the work for my websites, if I'm working in an environment where I can control what people use, I build for IE because to build for Netscape would take me a whole bunch of extra time because I have to play all sorts of their little games.
Mm-hmm.
Where I could get the job done in a heartbeat using IE.
It's just a superior product, and the market reacts to superior product.
Exactly.
That's why it's called market economy.
And the other thing was is that actually for a while, when IE4 was coming out and Netscape was revving around 4 as well, mm-hmm. I actually had both of them on my machine. I used them side by side. And I had a distinction. For work, I used Internet Explorer. For play, I used Netscape. And it was there was a very distinct line between the two, because for work, it was mandatory that I used IE because there was VBScript in it, mm-hmm. and I had to use it. For everything else, I used Netscape, and I enjoyed having both. But as Netscape got bigger and more bloated, the last version I loaded on one of my machines, I don't remember what it was, but it was a version where it downloads Communicator and all these other things, and you have to have a username, and so then you can have like the different people when they explore and everything, they can when they navigate, they can have their little their folder with all their and it's just like, get over it.
Yeah.
Because, to use the thing, it took me forever. What really turned me off of it was the fact when I installed it, it took me like 10 minutes before I could actually use the product, because I had to go through all this like startup stuff. And it's just like, why don't you just let me double click and open up?
Yeah, exactly. Like Internet Explorer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're talking the difference between a superior product and a non-superior product. And it's no wonder.
And as usual, just like the article said, that guy, I love the guy now. He said it perfectly. As usual, when you're the loser, complain to the government, and they'll pass a new law for you.
Those who can, do. Those who can't, cry to the government.
Yep.
And once again, I think that will be a website that I'm going to go back to a lot more often. This was one that I found when I was doing some research last night.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy actually had a lot of good stories on his website. That was one of them, of course. That was an opinion article, actually. But then they also have like actual news stories and whatnot. And the guy who runs this website, actually, the way I got to his website was I was at Wired.com looking for tech stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a link from Wired.com to this guy. The guy who wrote the article for Wired.com has a website where he has a news group that you can get this stuff. And he puts all these things on his website. So you can actually get all of his stories and a lot of other stuff on his website, which was really cool. So I went ahead and I signed up for it so I can get those things set. I might make a channel for my pocket PC so I could actually download that kind of stuff onto my pocket PC.
That would be really cool. Sounds like a really good website. I'm excited to add it to my favorites list.
Most definitely. Okay, one more. I think we can do.
I
don't think there's going to be a lot of argument here. So, it's Mandrake Linux policy angers members. Days after Mandrake Soft launched its controversial club to boost its bottom line, the Linux distributor has angered many of its users community by changing the rules of the Mandrake Club program. Mandrake Soft finalized version 8.2 of Mandrake Linux Monday and became the first Linux distributor to announce that it would include StarOffice 6.0, an office suite from Sun Microsystem that recently instituted fees after years of free downloads. Because of the fees from Sun, Mandrake Soft decided to only allow some Mandrake Club members to download the Office software, those paying higher fees. The decision to allow the downloads to Silver members and higher left out about two-thirds of Mandrake Club members, despite the club's original claim that all membership levels enjoy the same level of benefits. And it's like, well, if you have the same level of benefit, why in the world are you going to pay more money for a higher version anyway? So obviously Linux users have a screw loose to begin with.
No kidding. Yes. Well, I know I won't be getting anything more out of this, but...
But I'll pay for it anyway.
I decided to pay for it.
Anyway, Mandrake Soft explains...
Sounds like somebody, real quick, it just sounds like somebody's realizing that maybe they have to actually make money somehow, capitalism.
Yes, exactly. Mandrake Soft explains that it was taken by surprise by Sun's decision to charge for StarOffice, which was forced to come up with... and was forced to come up with compromise for its users. And this is the part I love right here. Quote, there are two possibilities. One, don't let club members download StarOffice 6.0. Two, let them download StarOffice 6.0 and cut our revenues. Or three, let only the high level of members download. after counting all of the pros and cons and going and doing some polls among the users.
You realize that there's three. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, and we thought three was the best solution. Because of this policy, the company changed the notes on Mandrake Club's site from all memberships enjoy the same benefits to all membership levels enjoy almost the same benefits. This, however, left many of the original club members feeling ripped off. Mandrake Soft decision on March 12th to launch a drive for the Mandrake Club surprised many of industry observers, with the company's claim that it is in danger of shutting down because it does not receive short-term funding from its user community. Mandrake Linux Distribution's short-term future is in jeopardy due to the simple factor, money. The company wrote in a statement, the club offers membership at the rate of $5 from $5 per month for individuals to $100 for individuals, and also offers a corporate membership. For Linux distributors, the situation is complicated by the fact that they deal with open source software, which generally is covered by licenses requiring that any development work done by the company be released freely back to the community. Linux companies generally make their revenues from retail versions of their product and by selling support services. Sun, for example, is beginning to charge for StarOffice 6.0, but still offers the software open source components as free downloads. So it's sort of funny. It's like, you know, Bill Gates said it years and years and years and years ago when all these nutcases were out there saying, oh, everything needs to be free, everything needs to be free. And Bill's like, screw that. I'm putting my hard-earned time, money, and energy into this product. And even though it's not something that you can hold because it's software on a computer, mm-hmm. it's still a product, and I still should get paid for it, and people should have to pay for it. And all these nutcases are like, no, it should all be free. It should all be free.
Yeah.
I think they're coming to find the cold, finally, hard reality that Bill Gates realized 20 years ago.
Yeah, they're finding out the reality, like you said, but I think that their whole argument to begin with was just ludicrous, that it's intellectual property and that it should be – well, it's intellectual knowledge. And knowledge should be free to the world. Well, you know, knowledge is what technology is built off of. And for technology to advance, people need to be paid for it. Otherwise, there's no incentives.
Exactly.
I mean, the idea to say that knowledge is free to the world, but then to charge for surgery is ludicrous. Knowledge is free to the world, but then to have attorneys charging for wills is ludicrous. I mean, our whole society works off the fact that some people are more knowledgeable than others, and
because of that, they can profit off
those of it. Others are going to pay for it.
Right. Yeah. And I think it simply boils down to simply that those who know something are able to make something that other people would like to have but don't know how to do it. And since we're not living in a commune, some communist nation somewhere, which is a great thing, we don't just give away that kind of knowledge. We sell it for a profit. And those who have the knowledge that everybody wants are the ones who can make the most money. And Bill Gates realized 20 years ago that there's something to be made in software. And obviously, there is, because he's made himself the richest man in the world.
Yep.
And I say more power to him, even though he's a Democrat and has all these Democratic ideals and is giving all sorts of money to all these terrible Democrat causes. More power to him. He earned that money. He has the right to give it out how he sees fit.
Yep, he does.
And those people that are holier than thou in this Linux world, which is irritating to me, they're coming to realize.
Yeah, it's nice to see them.
Oh, look at this. We need money.
Yeah.
How can we get money for this product that we can't charge for?
Yeah. Oh, I love it. It's good just to see it thrown back in their faces.
Plus, the fact that now StarOffice, Sun Microsystems is charging for StarOffice. And, you know, to get... You can get Linux for free if you download it from somewhere, but if you want to buy with documentation stuff, that's what you're paying for is the documentation. But now technically, if you go to the store, you're going to pay for that. You're going to pay for StarOffice. Other people are going to start making things that are going to be quote-unquote open source,
mm-hmm.
but you're still going to have to pay for it.
Exactly.
And pretty soon, Linux is going to be no better. And in their eyes, Microsoft's bad because you have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon, they're going to be no better than Microsoft in their eyes because you're going to have to pay for the things that they think should be free.
It's just stupid all the way around.
I agree. And unfortunately, we have actually ran over our time, and we need to shut down for the night. Once again, this was only a two-hour show due to the fact the Cub was closed.
Until sadly, 7 o'clock.
Sadly.
Yeah.
And we didn't get our intramural update again, and I meant to do that today.
Oh, yeah, we got sidetracked.
We definitely have to make sure that gets done in the future. Also, we will be back next week, of course, with a full three-hour episode of the Peter Eichmann Show. Unfortunately, next week I'm going to actually have to run out the door for now on since I got my new job, and it actually starts April 1st. So right after I get done here, I got to run down to Colfax.
You can be just like me.
Yeah. Peter Mann's going to have to get out of here in a heartbeat, and so
yes,
am I. So we'll leave it. This is the Peter Eichmann Show. This is Scooter.
And this is Peter Eichmann.
And you're listening to KZUU 90.7 FM. Here is the Reverend Horton Yeats.